Before I get started today, I wanted to make sure that I gave a big shout out to Jeannie Colwin Coaching. Jeannie Colwin is a stress and mind-body coach based in Los Angeles. She spent 16-plus years battling fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, and a myriad of other chronic symptoms that left her both physically and mentally exhausted. You can listen to her journey from when she first appeared on the pod, episode 188, and that'll be linked in the show notes so you can listen to that easily. After healing herself completely, Jeannie is now obsessed with getting her clients fast results through her one-on-one coaching program. With support, consistency, and accountability, clients learn to stop making pain the problem. It may seem overwhelming to finally address our emotions and make the big changes in our lives. If this is you, Jeannie offers free 45-minute consults where together you'll identify what's holding you back so you can take your next steps towards healing. Go to her website, jeanniecolwin.com. That's JeannieKulwin.com and book your free call today. I want to make sure that I give a big shout out to all of the patrons of the podcast. If you're interested in supporting the show, go to patreon.com/themindedfitnesspodcast. Let me give a shout out to Albert and Jeff, Julie, Albert, Deborah, Daniel, Kirk, Emily, Amanda, Elise, Enda, Dominic, Sasha, John, Jason, Mindy, Irina, Kelly, Tony, Michael, Mike, Christina, Ross, Julie, Brian, Sarah, Arnie, and Barb. Thank you all so much for continuing to support the podcast. Week after week, month after month, and for a lot of you, year after year, continuing to support the show. So welcome back to the show. I've got a great interview on tap today. So Hannah Studley, who's been on this podcast two times, something like that. She's lovely. Her work with the Three Principles has been awesome to learn about on this podcast over the last couple of years. She has a brand new book out called Very Well, released just on February 9th, and you can get it on Amazon. I would encourage you to check it out. She's so well-spoken. I've read one of her books. She's a tremendous writer, does great storytelling, and I would highly encourage you to go and check out this book. We talk a lot about some of the different things that she's working on, some of the things that she's worked on in the past. I think you're really going to enjoy it. Here is Hannah Studley. Welcome back to the Mind and Fitness Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Eddie Lindenstein. It's been a while, but truly one of my favorite people to talk to, not just for the podcast, but in general, Hannah Studley from the other side of the world. And it's always one of those challenges to get the calendar and scheduling right, but I'm so happy that you're here. Thank you for being here.
It's such a pleasure, Eddie. It's so nice to be with you again.
I do have to say, I had thought that so there was a time, it was a little less than a year ago. I'm sure that you remember it. I was having kind of a rough go, and I think we had planned, maybe it was to do a podcast, or maybe it was just a session. And I was so grateful that you were willing to talk with me for the half hour or 60 minutes or whatever it was. Life was just very, very heavy at that time. I'd kind of had this relapse, isn't even the right term, but I was just sort of stuck in kind of a bad way. And then I had had an insight, a couple days before, and we just spent some time talking about it. And it was very nice. So I want to thank you. It's been so many months, but the reason I think about that is, if you recall, it was at a baseball game, and baseball season is now heating up, and I'm more excited than ever, and that's kind of what made me think about that. Yeah.
Well, you're welcome.
Yeah. So there's a few things I want to chat about today. First of which, though, and it's all over your page, is that your most recent book just dropped, like in the last couple of days, right? Talk about that.
Yeah, exactly a week right now. It's exactly 7 days it's been out. And the most amazing thing is it got to number one as an Amazon bestseller, which is so thrilling until you find out that it was in the Freud category in the UK, which I think is hysterical.
Yeah.
Because I think it's just an algorithm, you know, that Amazon has.
Yeah.
You know, you can put yourself into, you can choose two categories, and then they sometimes choose one for you. And because Freud is in the name of the book, They put me in the Freud section, which is out of 100 books, so it's not too shabby. But I got to number one within 4 days.
That's awesome.
Above Freud himself. So I'm very proud of that.
That's awesome. So if people don't know the name and then the subtitle of the book, there is a reason that Freud is brought up. talk about that a little bit. What's it called? What's the subtitle? Because I think that's important in the Freud conversation. And then tell us a little bit about what it's about.
Yeah, so it's called Very Well. And the subtitle is A Novel About Hormones, Women, and Why Freud Was Wrong. And it's a novel, like all my books are stories, mm-hmm. because I find not everybody is weird like me and likes to read research, you know, especially if you're tired, you know, and you're in pain or you're overwhelmed or whatever. So I find if I put the information I want to give out to people in a story, then people can follow the characters and they can, you know, watch them fall down, hurting, searching, you know, finding out solutions and healing and having happy endings. And I kind of, you know, sneak the information in during the story. And I find people find that a much more easier way to learn this stuff. So this one is, it really is, I've had one guy read the book and he hated it, but I don't know if that was my writing or the subject matter.
Yeah.
Jack said it left him cold, but there could be many reasons for that. So basically, it's about a woman who's it's a mother and two daughters in the book, the main characters, and the mother is going through menopause. Her youngest daughter is going through what's called PMDD, which is a diagnosis. It stands for premenstrual dysphoric disorder.
Okay.
It's a recognized diagnosis, and it's kind of like PMS on steroids. I didn't have it, thank God, but women who have it are pretty much suicidal each month. And then the other daughter suffers from postpartum depression. So I tried to cover many of the hormonal situations that women go through in their lives. And the younger daughter, when she goes off to college, she discovers this new paradigm in psychology that I'm really into. And she brings it back to her mother, and they both find that their symptoms are going away.
Yeah.
Because as they start to understand how experience is created, their nervous systems calm down, and their symptoms start to melt away. And then they start sharing this with other women, and there's a whole drama and adventure going on and a backstory to all that. So, and they research Freud a little bit because, he worked a lot with the ideas that have now become, you know, so much part of psychology and how we understand the mind. And they start seeing that he was actually a neurotic addict. Don't get me started on Freud. When you find out what he was really like,
yeah.
Oh my God. He was brilliant at marketing. The guy was brilliant. Here we are talking about him.
Yeah.
You know, 100 years later. So, you know, if anybody's into marketing, you could learn a thing or two from Freud because he was a genius in that.
So I think that the novel concept is really interesting because to my knowledge, there's nobody that has written books in this space. And when I say this space, I'm talking about the mind-body connection, like that kind of space, right? There's all these different books about all these different things. To my knowledge, yours is the only one that's written in that way. And when I read Painless, I kept wondering, is this, because I know some of your story, but I don't know all of your story. And so I kept wondering, is this her story or is this a fiction book? So can you just talk about that a little bit? At least with that book specifically.
Yeah. So I've written three books now. My first book, I'd say, was probably about 80% true.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not chronologically, but I thought I was only going to ever write one book. So I kind of took all my juicy stories and put them in that book. And then I think each book, it's getting less and less me and more I'm having to be creative and come up and fictionalize more stuff.
Sure.
So I think Painless is probably about, not more than 50%. I mean,
okay.
I did start out in Australia. That's part of that story is true. The very beginning story is true, but obviously I've changed names and places and countries.
Yeah.
The story with the girl and me being taken care of her. But the whole clinic thing, I kind of made up. But the people in the clinic are clients or people I know who've had those particular physical issues like migraines or IBS or fibromyalgia. They're all people I've worked with. I just kind of, you know, took artistic license and kind of gathered them up together and imagined we were all in a clinic together.
Yeah.
So, and I didn't, I mean, I like Wimbledon, but I've never been there. So the whole, not giving the story away, but there's a sports part of it too. So it's kind of, you know, loosely based on facts that I know and people that I've met. I just kind of creatively put them together.
Yeah. Cause I knew there was some Australia in there, that you had some roots or some history there. I know that you're very well traveled, which the person in the book is. And then I was thinking, like, gosh, the clinic thing, and then the traveling with the college student, and like, all, did she really do all this? And my wife would be sitting near me sometimes, and I'd be reading it. I'd be like, okay, so she did all of this, and okay, so I'll have to let her know now that wasn't necessarily the case. But that's really, so the first book though is called The Myth of Self-Esteem. Is that right?
The Myth of Low Self-Esteem.
Self-Esteem. Maybe I'll have to check that one out too, if that's about 80% of the story. My wife is always, she's always very amazed when I bring up like the animatronics stuff. Like, she thinks that's really interesting. So I think that's really cool. So that's great. Okay. So Amazon is the preferred place for the new book?
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, it's the only place.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Okay. Switching gears. There was in a lot of what sparked me reaching out to you to say, hey, I would love to do another interview with you, is a video that I watched of yours. It's about 2.5 minutes long. It's on YouTube, and I'll link it in the show notes so people can go and actually watch that, even though, spoiler alert, I'm sure we'll give up everything that is in that video right now. You had talked about a concept of deep rest, and I'd love for you to define deep rest, what it means for this conversation around pain and around chronic illness and around three principles and basement thinking and that kind of stuff. Talk about deep rest.
Yeah, it kind of came to me when I started working with people who have long COVID. So this was about a year ago. I was approached by a businessman in England who had been kept in at home by his illness for 2 years. He hadn't left the house. He hadn't driven his car. Mm-hmm. He hadn't played with his child outside. He'd only gone out, I think, for medical appointments in 2 years. And he reached out to me because my story had been covered in another book of a colleague of mine, Joe Bailey, who'd written a book with Richard Carlson, Don't Sweat the Small Stuff. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
I haven't read it, but it's funny. I had a boss like 15 years ago that was, she was all in on that book. She talked about it a lot.
Right. It was very, very popular. So his co-author, Joe Bailey, is a colleague of mine. And Joe put my story in a new book of his called Thriving in the Eye of the Hurricane. It's a collection of stories of people who've triumphed and thrived through, you know, all kinds of difficult things. And there was a whole section on physical stuff. And so this businessman had kind of found me through that book. And we had one session. Now, admittedly, he did know a bit about the three principles before that. But we had one session, and he started feeling his energy coming back. And he started feeling that he was able to go out into the garden. And then he was able to do Zoom meetings. I mean, his story is quite incredible. There's also a video of him, me and him talking about this. Yeah. If anybody's, you know, wants help with long COVID. But he invented a word. He called it COVID-y. Because he found that if he did too much, he would get COVID-y. That's what he called it, right? His name's Marcus. He's a great guy. He kind of came up with this new word. He said, oh, I did too much today. I got a bit COVID-y. So we started looking at pacing ourselves. And because in the long COVID world and chronic fatigue, those kind of fibromyalgia worlds, they already talk about pacing yourself. Because if you've got low energy and you burn yourself out, it's a great way to sabotage everything. So you want to take it slowly. So we kind of came up with our own version of that, which we called deep resting. Because in the three principles community, we often talk about deep listening. As a coach, as a practitioner myself, when I'm working with a client, one of my goals is to deep listen, which is such a beautiful thing, because before in my coaching practice, I was taught how to do active listening, you know, repeat back to somebody what you're hearing. So they feel that you're actually, you know, validating them. But if you're doing that, you're kind of up in your head trying to remember everything. So you're not really present. So deep listening as a coach is listening with nothing on my mind, which makes you very, very present. And you're open for inspiration and new ideas. And it's just another a facet of this understanding. So we kind of realize that often when people are resting, when they're in pain or they're, you know, recovering from a surgery or they, you know, got chronic fatigue or COVID, they're often lying on the sofa, but they're using their cell phone, got Netflix on, and maybe ordering takeout, you know, right? So they're not really resting. You know, that's kind of lying down, but it's not deep resting. Deep resting would be switching that stuff off. And I'm not saying that's what you have to do, but I personally switch off from all my screens once a week. I have a day, I mean, it's part of the, you know, it's the Jewish Sabbath, which is, you know, one of the reasons it got me to be doing this. But also, it's so beneficial. It gives my eyes a rest, my mind a rest. You know, it to be free of that stuff, that overstimulation, is going to go a long way to helping the nervous system calm down.
Yeah,
and help us get well.
It reminds me of there's a friend of mine that she posted a meme on Instagram recently. It was something like, how proud she was of herself that she was able to focus on a TV show without scrolling social media. That's kind of what that reminds me. I know that you talked about no screen, but that is kind of what it reminds me of, is there is always hypervigilance. Maybe it's not really the right word here, but just sort of always something. And I've talked about, this before as like a tendency of just human beings in general. And one of the better examples I have is you go to the grocery store and somebody is, I don't know, let's say they're second and third in line to buy their groceries and they're waiting for the cashier. And, inevitably, people just can't stand that 20 or 30 or 40 seconds of nothing. So they will pull out the phone and scroll or something like that. There's not just I'm okay with standing there, which is not exactly the deep rest concept. However, it is certainly kind of having to have this preoccupied with something concept.
It's funny you should say that, because you just reminded me of what I realized where a lot of my back pain would often show up when I was standing in line. And when you're standing in line and you're standing there too long, it's frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the phone is obviously a good distraction for that. But notice I said too long. I've made a judgment. This is too long.
Yep.
This isn't acceptable. And there, you know, that just sent a whole bunch of danger messages to my brain. You are in a situation that's not okay. Let's fix it, change it, do something, whether it's, you know, being on your phone or, you know, complaining or huffing and puffing. And my back would always hurt in those situations to the extent that I could just walk into a supermarket or a bank or the airport and see the long line and go, oh, and my back would start hurting.
Yeah.
Because I knew it's going to be awful. I knew it's going to be frustrating. It's somebody, some idiot, you know, is making me wait.
And the only thing that you can do to curb or control that is, you know, scrolling the phone or grabbing the magazine or whatever,
that's what I used to think. And now I know that in that moment, I'm feeling my thinking.
Yeah.
It's not the idiot in the front of you who got, you know, has, you know, the 20 items in the 15 item aisle, or the guy at the airport who, when they and you know, oh gosh, now we're gonna have to go through it all, you know, like,
yeah.
Or the 12-year-old bank teller who's, you know, got it wrong. So now I know if I do get frustrated, which, you know, I'm human, I can get, you know, I can have a moment, I know it's just my thinking and it's gonna pass. There's nothing to fix or change, and it's actually my reaction to the situation that's causing the frustration, which is then in turn causing the nervous system to get, you know, revved up. So understanding that really turns the volume down on all those opportunities to get frustrated that I had, you know, that I lived with all the time before. And I think that for me, that's really why my pain went away.
At this point, with how practiced you are and that kind of thing, like, I mean, maybe it's an automatic, but like, let's say that you do go to it, because you had said like you would get this back pain when you would go and have to wait in a line, as an example. Does it ever get to that point now, even if it's just for a moment or a few seconds, and then you kind of snap out of it? Or like, or is it truly automatic for you at this point?
Well, the pain, it certainly doesn't get to the point where the pain comes, because I haven't, you know, I'm pretty much happy, very happy to say I've been pain-free for about 6 years now, 7 years maybe even. I can get annoyed, I can get frustrated, but I've gotten very sensitive to how that feels. Like, it's funny, I've gone from being a very sensitive person, like sensitive as in like everything annoys me and everything bothers me, to being sensitive to seeing it coming. You know, like you know, if a train's coming towards you, you can maybe hear it, see it, you know, before it's on top of you, so you can get out the way. So I can now feel a low mood coming, and it rarely develops into a real low mood, because I know what it feels like. And the moment I feel that, for me, it's usually like a head, my shoulders get tight. You know, I kind of feel sometimes a sense of urgency, you know, to fix it, change it, correct someone, you know, like do something about it. And the moment I start a hint, or I can smell it even, you know, like I can smell it coming.
Yeah.
I know that my thinking is heading in the wrong direction, and I stop listening to it, and it fades away. It stops, it goes, because it's kind of like, you know, a cat, if you don't, you know, stray cat, if you don't feed it, it will go somewhere else to find the food. I found that a lot of my trains of thought that used to end up in such insecure, miserable kind of thinking, it just doesn't develop that way anymore, because I've seen, well, first of all, I like being in a better mood. You know, I'm protective of my better mood now, not in a fearful way, because there's nothing wrong with being angry or upset. I just don't like, just why would you go there if you know how not to?
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean I don't have passion about things or don't get excited about stuff. I certainly do. But there's a different energy to that. You know, when you're passionate, like, you know, we had the World Cup a few months ago. I get very excited about the World Cup. And there's a lot of energy about that, even though it's kind of like you're yelling at the referee because he's, you know, they were all, you know, doing a terrible job. And, you know, gets knocked out again, you know. But there's an energy to that kind of passion or frustration, whereas kind of resentment and anger is very heavy and very intense. And you can start noticing the difference.
It's really interesting that you bring that up, because that's a thought that I've had about sort of the nature or the subtle, maybe even not so subtle, difference between, you know, kind of the traditional like TMS, Sarno, mind-body solution to the problem, which we're going to segue into like the feel our feelings thing in more detail here in a few minutes. But kind of that notion versus more of a notion of some of the things I've heard you talk about, which is, you know, not allowing things to have anything on you, basically lowering the stakes, essentially, is kind of how I see it. And a thought that I've had is like, is it impossible then to get attached or passionate about something? And the World Cup is a good example, but there's examples all over the place, you know, getting your hopes up about really anything. Is that not necessarily, quote, allowed? Because it may mean there could be some big disappointment. And then if that disappointment comes, how does somebody handle it? So that's kind of something that I've always had a hard time wrapping my head around. So do you have like any comments on that maybe?
Yeah, it's not so much that it's not allowed. It's just like if you notice you're making a sandwich and the knife is going into your hand, you're going to stop that.
Yeah.
Right? Because it doesn't feel good. I think I spent a couple of decades, like when I was going through my PTSD and really suffering and really miserable, innocently, because I didn't know any different. I was so used to being miserable and upset that I didn't really notice it. And so now I'm so used to being in a pretty okay mood that it's not allowed to be upset or disappointed. It's just that it comes when it does come, because it can. It doesn't have the sting or the volume that, you know, the venom that it used to have.
Yeah.
It's much milder. And so it's much easier not to have anything on it. Like I can be disappointed, but I'm not frightened of feeling disappointed. I'm not frightened of being angry anymore, before I used to be terrified of my moods because they would feel like they would overwhelm me and like, forget it. You know, I'm not going to talk to anybody for the next 2 or 3 days, you know, where's Hannah? Oh, she's like, she's gone. Right. Yep. And I would come out of my room or out of my, you know, like dark mood, you know, when I felt like, or when I could. And now it's like, it passes within minutes, or I've had absolute moments where I've literally popped out of it when I've seen how I really, all that happened is I got caught up in my thinking got a bit busy and kind of captured me for a few moments, and you can snap out of it. Other times I know that, you know, I'm gonna go to bed and in the morning I'll feel different, or I'll watch a movie and it's gonna be different. It's not that the movie made me feel better or the sleep made me feel better. It's that when you know that thought is always moving and every thought you've ever had has moved on, then do. And sometimes just like knowing that it's going to pass is enough, you know? Every mood, every heartache, every resentment, everything we've, you know, every time you've lost your keys, or everything has always passed on. And when you hang on to that fact, because it's a reliable system, then I don't feel panicked or urgent or the need to fix or change anything, because I know it's not broken. You know, it's just storm passing through, as it were.
It sounds pretty, I mean, like I'm an athlete, and one of the things that all of this stuff, like in this realm, that I feel has benefited me the most as an athlete is the difference of if you and I, or if I was competing 8 years ago or 7 years ago or 10 years ago, and I started having, you know, maybe my knee was hurting, like maybe I've been training a lot, my knee was hurting. Like the immediate thought for me had always kind of been like, what is this going to mean for me in a month? Or what is this going to mean for me in 2 or 3 weeks? Or what thing am I missing? Or what competition am I dropping out of? Or where am I going to go get a doctor appointment? Like that was kind of always the thought. Versus now, this was just happening a couple of days ago, where my right knee was kind of sore and I'd been doing a lot of sprints lately and that kind of thing. And I just didn't really have any thought about 2 weeks from now or 4 weeks from now or whatever, because I just sort of had the confidence to know that it's, you know, I'll wake up tomorrow and it'll be fine. Or in a few hours, it'll be fine. And it was, and I was doing sprints again this morning. It sounds a lot like that, at least in my small world of training, but being able to apply something like that to something bigger, to something life wise is a lot of what it sounds like, kind of having like a confidence to it.
Yeah, definitely. Because, I mean, I'll give you a very quick example that I had a client who had a nerve pain in her neck and shoulders, and she said she'd woken up with it every morning for 7 years. And she said, so I said to her, what happens when you wake up? And she said, well, I'm like, I'm so surprised. Like, why is this still here? You know, like I said to her, why are you surprised? If it happens every morning for 7 years,
yeah,
why are you surprised? I mean, wouldn't you be surprised if it wasn't there? That I would understand. So then I asked her, what do you do next? And she said, well, I start thinking, you know, how am I going to get through the day? You know, how am I going to play with the grandkids this afternoon when they come over? What if they need me? You know, kind of like you were saying, like projecting forward. Oh my gosh, what's going to happen? And I said, oh, great. You've put yourself into fight or flight before you've even got out of bed.
Yeah.
Yep. Right.
Yep.
And, you know, which compounds the, you know, the injury, you know, staying longer. And is it any wonder she's had it every morning? Anyway, so she kind of had a shift. I could see on her face. Yeah, why am I surprised? That's an interesting thought. Anyway, the next day I messaged her just to, you know, check in and say, how are you doing? And she wrote back, not surprised, still sore. Right? Okay. And then the next day she messaged me and she said, very surprised, not sore. And that was 2 years ago. And I met her. I went to London to speak at a conference this summer, and she was there, and she, no pain. It's been 2 or 3 years now, no pain. It did come back briefly when her husband was diagnosed with cancer, and it was pretty stressful, and it came back mildly, which kind of makes sense. And she saw that's what it was, and it went away again, and thank God he's doing fine. And you know, it's amazing when you really see the power of thought.
Yeah.
And the effect can have on us, and like what you were pointing to, when you stop feeding it, you know, the fight or flight response, if you don't feed it or fight it, it will just melt away, or it doesn't even need to arrive. It's just gonna, you know, having nothing on that, you know, occasional ache or something, enables the body to heal whatever little thing it was, and you move on and you're fine.
Yeah, I'm kind of sort of experiencing that on the peripheral. We talked just before we had recorded. My daughter had surgery 2 days ago for a she had a elbow dislocation, and she had a break in the bone, and there was kind of a bunch of stuff going on in the joint from an accident. And it's interesting, if this would have happened to us 10 years ago, or again, before I've kind of just had a little bit more faith and trust in the body and the body's ability to heal, I think I would have been very concerned about her future just in general. You know, she's 8 years old and concerned about what's it going to be like at 15. She's not gonna be able to play sports. She's going to have accommodations, all this, but sort of parenting in a way for what it is that you had just talked about, being able to somehow project the confidence of what to expect. Not, you know, cause I haven't had that injury. I don't know exactly what to expect, but I just keep telling her that every day when you wake up, you're going to feel a little better than you did yesterday, and you're going to feel better than, you know, the day after that and that kind of thing. And in 5 weeks, a little, you know, around my birthday, your cast is going to come out, your pins are going to be pulled out, and you know, you'll regain your function within a week or two of that. And then you'll be totally normal around spring break. Like, just, it ain't no thing. And subsequently, she's not freaking out. It's really kind of amazing to see that happen. And my wife was talking when she was heading in for surgery that, you know, kids really mirroring how their parents are reacting and how much of that is projection. And she was not, I mean, she was cracking jokes with the anesthesiologist as they're putting her to sleep. And because we were kind of no-selling it, just making the assumption that everything's going to be just fine. Like, there's, you know, you're in good hands. Everything's going to be cool. But again, that wouldn't have been Eddie 8 years ago or 7 years ago. And it sounds like kind of what you're talking about too.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, kids have such amazing resilience, you know. Well, we all do. It's just, as we get older, we get more cynical. We have life experiences, you know, that make us a bit more nervous or insecure. But I mean, it's when you watch little kids, you know, and they can scream the house down, you know, because they didn't get their candy or whatever they want. And then 2 minutes later, they're okay, like it never happened. They get over stuff really quickly.
Yeah.
You know, we could learn a lot from kids with the way they, you know, deal with stuff like that. They're so much more in the moment and so much more present than we are. As my teacher, Dr. Bill Pettit, says, he's a psychiatrist and twice board certified in mind-body medicine, overachiever guy. And he always says, we're either in our thoughts or we're in our lives. You know, I'm either up in my head, missing everything, or I'm present in my life. And it sounds like you've been really present with her, which is such a great example. And so she's learning that obviously it hurts like crazy and you've got to take care of it, but there's no need to escalate the situation to make it worse.
Yeah. I had been, early last week I was writing, I'd planned to do a solo podcast. The topic that kept running through my head, and all I'm looking at the notes that I had written down for it. And it was, this concept of, it said, as adults, we get more cynical and we're instead of in our lives, we're in our thoughts. And it's the concept that I've had on my mind a lot lately, which is this divergence of preparing for the worst versus being okay with the worst. And I tend to find that when it's the latter, if you're okay with the worst never actually comes. It never actually happens. Versus preparing for the worst, you're sort of sitting there having an anticipation. And it's exactly like you said, it's living in your thoughts as opposed to living in your lives or life.
Right, because if you're anticipating, then you're feeling that anticipatory thinking right now. You don't need the disaster to happen. You're already feeling it.
Yeah. Yep.
Right.
Yep.
Like fear of flying. It's like, I bet people who have fear of flying are anywhere near an airport. Right. So it can't be the airplane that's creating their experience. It's their fearful thinking about the experience that's creating, that they're experiencing right now. And that's what the nervous system is picking up on.
Yep.
Right now. Which is why we can get, you know, pain or sick or, you know, stressed out. And we're sitting in a comfortable chair and nothing's actually happening. But it might.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And then, whoa, what did that just do to my,
right,
you know, to my
Right. If you can add a comma to the end of, but it might, you could also say, but it might not. you know, and everything will be just fine. Okay. So where I want to wrap up, you've had this, you have this great, and I don't know if you came up with it or if it was from somebody else, but, the phrase I hear you say a lot, and I think it's so perfect, is feeling our thinking. And I saw you talking about something recently around, do we have to feel our feelings? And this is it's a baseline mind-body connection, Sarno, Nicole Sachs, you know, Howard Schubert, like kind of all the people in that is the concept of feeling our feelings. And it's not like these are mutually exclusive with feeling our thinking. Talk about the necessity or non-necessity of feeling our feelings. And maybe it could also just be that there's an alternative definition that you have for feeling our feelings. But talk about that, kind of what's been on your mind about that lately.
Sure. I think feeling feelings is fantastic because that means you're present in the moment. Mm-hmm. But if you're needing to dig them up to feel them, then that sounds stressful to me.
Yep.
That sounds like manufacturing some stress. But I think what someone might say to me to counter that would say, well, then the person's numb or they're in denial. And I'm like, well, let's go back to this idea that it's a reliable system. If we're always feeling or thinking that we're having right now in this moment, and I'm not feeling anything, then maybe that's what needs to happen. Maybe that's wisdom. You know, feeling every feeling might actually be inconvenient or it might not be useful.
Yeah.
And I think you can't not feel a feeling if it comes up in the moment. You know, if you get bad news or, you know, or you shut your finger in the door or something, whatever it is, you know, you can't say, oh, I'm not going to feel that feeling. Nobody does that. Right. So if you're not feeling it in the moment, you're either drunk, in a coma, or, you know, something is or some kind of, you know, chemical is interfering. And if that none of that is the case, then you're going to feel it or you're not going to feel it. But so that to me is not an issue. The issue, I think, happens when people are told that they have to drag up feelings from the past,
yeah,
or dig stuff up. And that kind of goes back into, you know, the beginning of a conversation connecting with Freud, because he kind of invented those ideas that we need to do that. And it's kind of infiltrated a lot of the therapy. In fact, another of my teachers, his name's Dr. George Pransky, he's a psychologist. He calls it low mood therapy. Like if you're digging around in the past to find something that you're not quite sure where it is or what it is, and you're going to come out of that therapy session feeling pretty low, pretty miserable, what if you knew you didn't have to do that? Now, I hear people shouting denial, right? I am very aware of stuff that happened in my past. You know, I went through some terrible things in my 20s. And one of the things I learned is to go back into the past from a low mood is psychological suicide. Now, that sounds a little bit dramatic. It's a quote from Sydney Banks, who kind of put all these ideas together. But if you think about it, I mean, when I think about my experience, whenever I went back into the past when I was encouraged to do writing or reflection or you know, or the psychiatrist made me tell the story again, it's draining, it's exhausting, it's frightening to think about that stuff when you're in a low mood. But today, I can tell you any graphic detail about some of the things that happened to me, but from a better state of mind, it's full of understanding, even compassion. I mean, I even feel compassion these days for the men that hurt me, because it wasn't personal. They didn't know me. It was, you know, attacks on the street. But they must have been in a really low, terrible place in order to attack a woman, right? What must they be going through? Now, it's taken me a long time to... Well, I don't know, even I never had a resentment at them. I can think about the past without getting upset about it. But if I was in a low mood, it probably would be a disaster. I'm crying, you're crying, we're all, you know, going to be in a mess.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
But I think state of mind is everything. And so if I'm not feeling a feeling, maybe it's not there to be felt, and that's okay. Like it's I I get disappointed, I get happy, I get, you know, I have plenty of feelings. I don't have to go digging them up. And what I found is I don't need to dig around in the past to get well. My pain went away when I started realizing that I was torturing myself with my own thinking. I was creating the misery by living in the past. I was digging it up. And so, you know, our brains don't speak English or French or Hebrew or any other language. They only have our five senses to rely on. And so if I'm inputting, think of a computer, if you're inputting a lot of junk. So by being present and being in the moment where we have all the courage and wisdom and resilience we need, our nervous system gets the message that we're safe and we're okay. And then from that place, I can reflect on the past or, you know, think about the future, but it has a completely different energy to it. It has a healing energy, a lightness to it. And I'm feeling that good feeling. And Sid Banks was always saying, look for a good feeling. When you're in a better feeling, we're much more open to new ideas, to, you know, our bodies are healing. It's such a much more, like I said to a client once, never underestimate the healing power of a good mood. Right?
Yeah.
A good mood is like laughter is the best medicine. There's so much truth in that. And from there, we can, you know, make judgments about, you know, how we need to protect ourselves or, you know, plan for the future or whatever we need to do from a state of mind where common sense is guiding us as opposed to fear.
I mean, it sounds like a lot of the root of that statement and a lot that what you were just talking about is, and really the difference, it's not that feeling our feelings is wrong or incorrect or whatever, but it's feeling our feelings, comma, of the past. That really the anecdote is far more just right now, which really aligns well with the snow globe concept that I've heard you talk about. I call it being a watcher of like a river, just watching a river, and sometimes a stick rolls by and then you see an otter and then you see it like it's there 1 second and then it's gone the next.
Yeah, there's one of my favorite quotes, and I always forget if it's Plato or Socrates or one of those Greek guys. He said, a man can never step in the same river twice. Yeah. Now, you could go to the Hudson or the Thames or whatever every same day of the year, you know, for decades, but it's never going to be the same river.
Yeah.
And our minds are like that. Our minds are constantly in flow, like thought is completely flowing all the time. And so like a river, it's constantly new, and the potential and the possibility for fresh and new is there all the time. That's who we really are. We are built to be fresh and new. And it's only by this, you know, for me, an innocent misunderstanding that I had to go back in the past to fix things that kept me down and heavy.
Yeah.
In pain.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, thanks for being here. We went a few minutes. I told you 30. We're at 40 and change. So thanks for being here again. Again, the book, All Well.
Very well.
Very well. Pick it up on Amazon. Again, the link will be in the show notes. Thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Okay, take care.